Hey, you're listening to Radio Free Cybertron. This is Brian Kilby here. It's Friday, July 17th. You probably won't be hearing this on Friday, but it's Friday, July 17th. Again, this is Brian Kilby, and with me I have JD Church. Hey, JD, how's it going?
It's going great, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm awesome. Hey, for the long time RFC listeners, they know who you are and who you're associated with, but for those three or four new people that we've picked up in the last 10 years, hey, tell them who you are.
Sure. Well, okay. So, if you want to go by screen name, I've been through a few. I used to go by Jay Dale mainly for the last several years. I've been going by Unicron Spawn. I started out independently and then got hooked up with Cold Hard Slag. So I spent several years with those guys until we disbanded. We're still friends, but the site's no longer around. So other than that, I've been laying low, hiding out. Yeah.
So when you were J Dale, that was back on Alt Toys Transformers.
Correct, correct. Yeah, and I ran my big claim to fame at that time was ATT Who's Who. So that was the biggest thing that I was running at the time that most people knew me for.
Yeah, we call those memes, but back then that was just something that sort of happened. That was the Who's Who on Alt Toys Transformers. That's when everyone would sort of expound on themselves. It was kind of like MySpace on Usenet. And they just pretty much went off on who they were, what they did, and their favorite hobbies, where they're from, so on and so forth. That sort of actually gets me to where I wanted to start. Now, the Transformers fandom and the Transformers property is huge. Would you say that's actually probably where we were in the 1980s at the peak of Transformers, or would you say it's larger?
I would say it's larger, and the reason I would say that is even in the 80s, even when it was popular, it was still a toy brand. It was still mainly for kids. Obviously, it got some popularity outside of that. There were some commercial tie-ins. You would see advertisements with transforming robots and things, but I think mainly, I mean, this is probably the most mainstream that the whole toy line, the whole series has been in its history.
Yeah, I would agree. Not only is it more mainstream, what Transformers is, it's much larger. It's a movie franchise. It's the toy line. It's multiple comic books. I mean, we don't just have the G1 series and maybe like the Headmasters miniseries. We have several series and miniseries going on. And every year or two, we have a new Transformers cartoon. And it's a different Transformers cartoon. We've had in the past, oh goodness, we've had in the past 8 years, what, five different Transformers cartoons. We've had Robots in Disguise. We've had the Unicron Trilogy, and I want to say that's three separate. Then we've had the Transformers Animated, and Transformers, it's just much larger than it's ever been.
Yeah, well, Hasbro's strategy has got more advanced. So, I mean, in the 80s, at that time, we don't have the internet. We don't have any of the tools as far as communications go that we have now. So the way Hasbro had to reach kids, to reach the people that were ultimately going to be buying those products, was through television, and that was the best way. And they also did the comic series as well. And I think, I mean, I don't know what their mindset was, but I think some of the comic approach was almost that gave them the story development, the character development that bled over into what was being done at Sunbow. But now, for any product to survive, it's really got to be able to hit the mass media, hit at multiple levels. So it's got to be able to hit comic book, internet, toy, show, everything in order to be really in the public mindset. And I think that's been part of Hasbro's approach so far. It seems to have worked well with Transformers. Of course, we've got G.I. Joe coming out.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to pan out for G.I. Joe the way it has for Transformers, but But yeah, I think the approach is different just because marketing in that way has evolved a lot in the last 20, 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, back in the 80s, they were just fresh off the deregulation to where they could have a toy line based off of, or a TV series based off a toy line. So they could have a protracted 30-minute, you know, commercial every afternoon. And Hasbro really has sort of, you know, mastered the craft after all these years. I mean, of course, the new movie wouldn't be around if it wasn't for the original series from the 80s, which was huge. I mean, before the new movie, that was really the high watermark for where the popularity stood. I mean, God bless Beast Wars. It's still probably the best TV series we've had, though I do love animated. But Beast Wars did not achieve the popularity that the G1 cartoon did. And we wouldn't have a new movie if it wasn't for the G1 cartoon, because the fan or the people who are responsible for the new movie were fans of the, you know, 80s series. I mean, Don Murphy is seemingly, he's a jerk, but he's seemingly also a fan.
No, yeah, and that's absolutely right. Well, and like I say too, it's a different landscape out there now than it was. I say it's different, it's not. I mean, Masters of the Universe had a live action movie in the 80s, so
it was glorious too.
No, it was something else. But I think if you look at, you know, moving into talking about Beast Wars or thinking about Beast Wars, the thing about Beast Wars is, again, that was when the toy line started to pick back up. At that time is when Hasbro started to redouble its efforts and focus back on the toy lines that were really making it money, that it knew had market potential. So you see Hasbro going back to focusing on Transformers, focusing on G.I. Joe to try and make some money. And at that time, they also knew that what sold was television. You know, and that is what part of what made Transformers successful originally. And in a sense, they almost didn't know what they had, I think, with Beast Wars. And it was something that had been talked about in several interviews at the time. In particular, talking to like Larry Dottilio and Bob Forward, that Hasbro really kind of said, just run with it. We just need something up there. And I think that lent to why Beast Wars was so good, and I think why a lot of fans got back into the series at that time, and why, if you want to call it the golden age of the fandom, if you would, that time period around Beast Wars, that so many people got re-energized. And I think that went a long way to re-energizing the line.
Yeah, you actually bring up something that I wanted to talk about, the fandom of the time of Beast Wars. Beast Wars, of course, originated, was it 1996? It was after a long period, after the, basically the death of the G2 comic. G2 ended, of course, issue 12. It only lasted a year after it was brought back in the pages of G.I. Joe featuring Snake Eyes. But, yeah. I love that. Andrew Wildman did the art. I liked Wildman's art a lot better on G.I. Joe than I did Transformers, but that's neither here nor there. But there was a drought. I mean, there was basically nothing. The fandom, really, all people had in that period, and this would have been the time frame of the mailing list. Back then, the online fandom was an email list. So for those out there, most of our listeners are long-term fans, but the people that aren't, the online fandom, as you know it, did not exist. It was literally an email list, and people would email stuff back and forward, and that was... I mean, that was pretty much it. Then we had Alt Toys Transformers, and I'll get into that in a second. But G2 ended. There was a drought of probably about two, three years. And I think it was 18 months, 2 years, when we didn't have anything. I mean, there was nothing. There were no toys. There was no TV series. There was just whatever tape trading went on. You know, for me, all I had was an FHE cassette, roll for it, and a bootleg copy of Transformers the Movie. And that's all I had to watch. Sci-Fi put on something in the late 90s, concurrent to Beast Wars, thereabouts, that was edited. But there wasn't that much. And Beast Wars came, and it was good. But with that also brought divisiveness. We had the faction of the fans who said, this isn't Transformers. This is something else. And pretty much there was a big rift in the fandom. And that all took place on Alt Toys Transformers, which was the successor to the mailing list. That's where I actually started my online involvement in the Transformers fandom. That's where you started too, correct, JD?
Right. I had gotten into ATT before I had met Tim and Heath. Back in, I met them in 2000. Would have been about the time that I got in with them. But yeah, I had been in and around AT&T since I was in college, so 97, 98. I had gotten involved at that time. Yeah, I think the thing about talking about that time, and I came in, I think, right after the Great Flame Wars. The thing about that time, or what I think about that time, was that, again, Hasbro was trying to redouble its efforts. It was trying to bring in something fresh. It had been doing cars and things for so long and not selling. I mean, because even you talk about that dead time, but even within that dead time from a fiction standpoint, between the end of the G2 comics and then the beginning of Beast Wars, they were still pumping out toys. I mean, there were still G2 toys. There were some figures that they were putting out. I don't think there was ever really a break for them as far as the toy line goes.
I think G2, there's some G2 stuff on the shelf. I don't know if they were making stuff in America, but in Europe, in Japan, definitely they were.
Right. And so even though there was a lull spot, there was not a lot of fiction. And I think when you get to that time, I mean, of course, any fan, I mean, look at the break in Star Trek. I think that's a perfect example of what happens to a fandom. You have the people who are the fans of the original series, you have Next Generation come in, and people factionize.
And the people think that they own the series. I mean, I'm guilty of that with the new movie. Go, that's not Transformers. I mean, I'm guilty of that sometimes.
Yeah, and I think, well, and that's only natural, right? We personify things, we personalize them, we have a vision for what something is, and we assume that that's what it is, and everybody should just understand that. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, unless you just can't overcome it, and then you have what happened to us at ATT. Like I said, I came in right after the faction break, but again, I think what feeds into that is, I mean, if you look at where the series went from the end of G2, the G2 comic. G2 comic series, fantastic comic series from a fiction point of view.
Not with an art point of view, though.
The art was hit and miss, certainly. I mean, yeah, and yeah. But I think from a story angle, that was probably the most adult, most mature for that time in particular that we had seen the series.
I would agree.
And I think that lent itself to a certain group of the fandom who were like, these are the kinds of stories. This is where we're at now as far as Transformers goes. So then Beast Wars comes along, and it's kind of funny. I'm actually going through and rewatching Beast Wars right now with my wife, who had never watched the series, never interested in Transformers until we got married. And I really had to tell her.
My wife still has no interest in Transformers.
I mean, she doesn't either, but she humors me, and she'll watch the show with me. But we started to watch Beast Wars because, again, just like you said, Beast Wars is the most mature. I think it's some of the best stories out of the fiction, at least from a total how it's presented. But even season one, you go back and you watch season one, there's some hit or miss stories in there that are fairly juvenile.
Oh, yeah.
And because it's a kid series. I mean, you have to, like, remember that. Like, this was a toy line made for kids. And that's okay. That has to be okay because that's what it is. And so I even had to tell her, I was like, okay, some of these episodes we're going to have to get through. Some are good. Then there's like Low Road, which, yeah. You know. So that's where I think a lot of people got factionalized, at least from that standpoint. The toys were certainly an issue in that. I think the fiction was probably a lot to swallow.
Yeah, I'm not.
The time.
The, The first couple run of figures I'm not that fond of, but once they hit their stride with Transmetals in season two, oh my god, it was Beast Wars toys were so much better. Even the original line of Beast Wars toys were far head and shoulders above most of the stuff that we got in Generation One. Transmetals came, and it was again, it was a new high watermark. The toys were so good. I have friends who still talk about how much they love Transmetal One Cheetor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, hands down. I mean, that was a great figure. And it's funny because even if you though put that figure against some of the stuff we have today, it still seems a little blocky and a little bricky. But absolutely, I think for that time, the Transmetal Two, and I think the story is wise for the show as well. I think season two is when the story is really well. I mean, the pace was faster. You think season one is twice as long as season one or season two?
Yeah.
And so the pace was a lot faster. It was much better from the story standpoint. I mean, we sat down. It took us probably 3 weeks of one or two nights a week watching to get through season one, and then we come to season two, and we were done with season two almost in like 2 days. So. It just moves faster. The stories were better, and that was true for the toys as well. I think you're absolutely right. The Transmetal One were good. Transmetal Two, some of those were hit and miss, but much better as far as as far as the production goes.
Going back to that was what 98, mid 98, something like that, late 99 or early 99, season two of Beast Wars. I can remember on Alt Toys Transformers, it was unreal. You had these people had been starved to death for years for fiction because there really was none other than fan fiction and, like I said, bootleg tapes. I don't know if the quote unquote Star TV dubs had made it to the. Internet yet. I don't think I remember seeing those until about 2000. But people had gone so long without anything, and boom, Beast Wars Season 2, it was phenomenal. And it's really hard to put ourselves into that mindset today, because today we have not only Beast Wars to look back on, we have Beast Machines, Robots in Disguise, the G1 cartoon. We now, thanks to the pervasiveness of torrent sites and what have you, we have access to all of the Japanese series, you know, Headmasters, Master Force, Victory, Beast Wars 2, Beast Wars Neo. We have access to all of this information that we really didn't have 10 years ago. We've had two movies in the last 2 years, and they've both been huge. I really did not expect the first movie to attain the level of success that it did. 10 years ago, we had none of this, and Beast Wars was just something special.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing, you take the good with the bad, right? So where we're at now, as say like 10 or 15 years ago, when I hate to say almost 15, but anyway, it was over 10
almost
years.
Almost 15.
But when you think about that time when we were at Beast Wars, and that's why I kind of jokingly say the golden age of the fans, because it really was. At that time, we were still sort of an underground movement. We were a tight-knit group. There were only, you know, maybe 1,000, 2,000 people at most, you know, reading ATT on a daily basis and keeping up with what was going on. And a much smaller group than that even posting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really, there was only probably about 50 or so, I would say, at the most, people that were really posting and keeping up with what was going on.
I was probably two or three of those people at any point.
Right. And so it was nice because we were close-knit. We also were a bit naive, I think, at that time as well, because, again, we had an overinflated sense of how important we were. You know, when things... And that happened for a couple reasons. One, because we were such a small community. Two, because another thing, again, going through watching Beast Wars with my wife, I'm stopping and I'm like, okay, that's a reference to somebody that was on ATT.
Yeah.
That's a reference to ATT itself. You know, so we were very close to the fiction that was going on at the time. And you can liken it to what was happening most recently in Animated with Derek J. Wyatt being very much a fan and building in little jokes here and there. So you transition to now. What's different now? Well, what isn't different now? Everything is different. It is and isn't. Yeah, I mean, because, again, the fandom is much larger. More people have been able to reach out. We're also in the midst of Web 2.0, whereas at that time we were at, like, Web 0.5.
Yeah, the World Wide Web existed back then, but the web was literally a paper simulator. That's what it's famously been called. The World Wide Web was a paper simulator in the 1990s. That was the extent of it. I mean, you could sort of, you know, jot stuff back and forth to people, you know, as in message boards, but all of this, you know, sharing of media, the world revolves around the internet now. Back then, the internet was still a novelty.
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, all of the stereotypes that you hear about nerdy guys that sit in a dark room and look at a computer.
That was,
I mean,
it.
We were up. I mean, that was us. That was who we were. And at that time. So now it's much more public. Everybody's involved. And it's good and bad. It's bad for those of us, I think, who were really big at the time, because we sort of, you know, I think in some ways we've fallen by the wayside.
We're dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I don't have...
I'm not.
Well, I mean, you know, we can crawl back, but I think there were other people that had more time. There were other things that were going on. You know, personally for us, I mean, we're of an age group where we've got other things going on. So, you know, I don't think it's bad. I think all of this stuff is good. You know, I think overall, if we want to talk about continually having figures, continually having toys, continually having shows going on, I think all this stuff is great. I think it's good to have all the input. I'm a big Web 2.0 fan. So I like it. I mean, I think it's good. I mean, certainly I'm always going to pine for the days when, you know, everybody had a website and everything worked out. But again, now everything's centralized. There's only a few big Transformers news websites. It's easier to keep up with information, keep up with what's going on. And I think the movie and the newer properties have gone a long way to make these properties large enough that I don't think we have to worry about them going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I posed the question on the Facebook page, and if you want to join our Facebook page, I'm not going to do a forum because I'm too lazy. So if you want to actually join in the conversation, go to tfradio.net and click up there at the top on Facebook and join the Facebook fan page. It's not one of those fan pages where the owner, you know, is absent. I am probably the most involved person along with you on that page. So if you want to participate, go ahead, go to tfradio.net, click on Facebook.
But yeah, absolutely. We want to, I think it's good to have as much input as possible. It's brought us things and it's brought the fiction, I think, to a place where it wouldn't be otherwise. So, you know, for example, let's look at the two recent live action films. Say what, you know, a lot of people will say good, bad things otherwise. I like the movies for what they were trying to be, not what they necessarily people wanted them to be.
While we're on this, let's go ahead and actually take a break, go to Goldimus, sorry, not Goldimus Prime, he's XV now. XV.
He's evolved.
It's just fun to say XV. He's reviewing Ravage from the Revenge of the Fallen toy series. I want to get more into the movies after XV's review. So take it away, XV.
This is XV with the It Figures toy review of Revenge of the Fallen Deluxe Ravage. Ever since the very first toys from the previous movie line, we've had a selection of Transformers that are conceived as robots first and foremost, and their alternate modes are barely a consideration. Take any Megatron. Please. So naturally, Ravage is made with almost all effort going solely to the cat mode, and there's no question it benefits from this level of attention. The basic design, the form of the cat mode itself, is a really nice bit of work. Just as the bulk of the toys are humanoid but look alien compared to traditional Transformer design, Ravage is unmistakably feline, but with the specific details all changed in such a way as to present it as what an alien thinks a cat should look like. Rows of spines and spikes run along the back, along with narrow strips of armor around areas that should naturally flex, like the base of the neck and the mid-body. The head is basically cat-like in shape, but has a single giant optic sensor in the middle of the head above where the nose would be. The tail is maybe not so much alien as slightly skeletal-looking. The many, many segments represented in the sculpted detailing, while perfectly natural for mechanical parts, look like the vertebrae an organic cat would have in its tail. In a somewhat classic move for robot animals, the tail ends up in a set of three blades leading into a small claw at the very tip of the tail. It's good for more than just swatting flies. The feet are almost bird-like in their construction. Two pairs of opposed claws on each foot, giving Ravage potential to grab things with any of his 4 feet. If there's one detail to drive home that this is a Ravage, it's the artillery mounted at the hips. While the original Ravage had what could have been either jets or missiles, depending on your preference, this Ravage carries large cannons, articulated to be able to aim anywhere along a roughly 80-degree arc, or even further if you'd like Ravage to be firing toward his own feet. In the film, these were portrayed inconsistently, sometimes acting as cannons, other moments behaving like machine guns. The sculpting on the toy is ambiguous enough to pass for either. On a technical level, Ravage has a great deal of articulation. Sadly, in practice, he is not nearly as poseable as he would seem. The front legs are fantastic, though. Transformation joints do double duty as shoulder blade joints, effectively, and the front legs can be posed in very natural cat-like ways. A swivel in the upper leg features detailing to give the illusion of exposed working mechanism. There is also a very restricted hinge just above the elbow, which seems to serve no real purpose. The best of all is that the claws on the front feet are jointed, so Ravage's feet can be spread for standing or closed around narrow objects. The hinge is more than stiff enough to grasp something reliably. The rear legs, despite having many joints, are more restricted in how they can move. The upright part of the rear feet, the last section of the leg, is restricted from going far forward enough to do a really good about-to-pounce or stalking pose. They're also too restrictive to even be able to have Ravage sit down. A big letdown after the front feet is the fact that the rear feet are a single piece instead of the front feet's nicely articulated claws. There is enough good articulation in the legs, though, to stand Ravage fully upright just on the rear legs. With a little retooling, you could probably get a basic robot mode out of this. The tail is only purposely jointed in three places: at the base of the tail, roughly the midpoint, and a ball joint just before the blades and claw. A swivel exists before the second hinge, but it's really a safe failure point and not meant as articulation. The base hinge is prevented from going up, leaving the tail angled downward. The midpoint hinge can at least raise a little bit, so the end of the tail sticks straight behind. The ball joint at the end has a limited range and mostly only works to rotate the claw around. The head is entirely immobile due to the Mech Alive gimmick. When you slide a lever in the back, the head lunges forward, jaw opening and ears folding back. As alien as this looks, I almost expect a second set of jaws to emerge from the larger one. Though largely a matter of folding limbs around, the transformation does manage to at least minorly modify the body. The halves of the chest both move out and winglets unfold from them. But yeah, it is otherwise just wrapping limbs around or folding things underneath the body. The so-called re-entry mode looks a lot like Ravage shielding his face with his legs. It's also hard for me to take this as a proper mode anyway, since it's specifically for entering the atmosphere, and would reasonably be useless on the ground. The first movie's protoform figures are at least understood to be the stage right before the Transformers actually get themselves real alternate modes. Anyway, unlike what the packaging would lead you to believe, this mode does lock together pretty well, and this is thankfully documented by the instructions, which you will probably need to make sure you get all the fiddly bits just right. I can't remember who, but someone said that this mode looked like Ravage doing an optimal Optimus impression, and I have to agree there. When it comes right down to it, Ravage is a toy of a robot cat that just happens to sort of transform into something, but the cat mode is generally the better for it. It could be better as a Transformer, but it's very good in the cat mode. At the least, it's probably worth picking up on sale. Be sure to check out It Figures at figurereviews.com for more in-depth reviews and some of the best toy photography online. Why? Because It Figures.
Hey, thanks XV, that was great. So again, I'm sitting here with JD, and we were talking about how the fandom was different, how the fandom and Transformers really as a whole is different in 2009 as opposed to what it was back in the 90s when we both became involved. JD and I are basically the same age. We're both 30 at this point. Yeah, I know. I just turned 30 a little over a month ago, and it sucks.
It sucks, doesn't it? Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, I was 20 when I started this, 20 years old.
Yep.
Just a wee lad, but now I'm a big strapping man. But you started talking about the movies, and that's really sure. where I wanted to lead this. I'm not a fan of the movies. I'm a fan of the sense that they're Transformers, and I'm a fan in the sense that if they make money, that Hasbro makes money. If it wasn't for the movie from 2007, we wouldn't have a Transformers animated. So with that out of the way, you are a fan, aren't you, JD?
I mean, of the movies? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the movies. I think I like them for what they were trying to be, not what people wanted them to be, if that makes sense. Shall I elaborate?
let me see if I can read into you. Kind of like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, everyone wanted that to be like the second coming of Indiana Jones. It really wasn't, but it was okay on its own. I mean, you watch it, and if you don't look at it in context of it being, you know, the fourth Indiana Jones movie, even though the Raiders, The Last Crusade wasn't that great, even if you don't look at it in that lens, it's an okay movie.
Well, yeah, and I think so. Right, because here's what happens: we get nostalgic about things. We're at the same place. The more things change, the more they stay the same. We're at the same place when you come to the movies, I think, than we were when we were at the beginning of Beast Wars. So to sort of tie this. So you come to just before the film, and the fandom is at a height. It's not massively marketed, so yes, you've got toy lines out there. Yes, people are interested, more people than were, say, at the Beast Wars time. But it's still not mainstream. It's still not on everybody's tongue. And then you get to the making of the movie, and here you have the split again. Why? Well, the movie's different. The designs are different, the toys are different, the approach is different, the attitude is different, and we don't like change. And that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and I don't blame anybody that doesn't like the movie. I understand why. But here's the way I think about it, and here's the way I approach it, why I think it's a good property. The movie is trying to sell tickets, and Hasbro's trying to sell toys. So when you look at the films for what they're trying to be, which is trying to be an action film, we are used to Transformers being very epic. We are used to grand storylines and, great action. I mean, again, you go back to Beast Wars, look at Code of Hero.
Yeah.
That's a high story. I would say from a drama standpoint, that episode is better than the movies. But that's that's not what the movies are trying to be.
No.
The movies are trying to be an action film. And I think measured against an action film, I think they hold up. And I think the movie going audience proved that.
From an action film stance, I don't have any complaints with Transformers. I mean, the first Transformers movie was genuinely funny. Sam's parents, I enjoyed them. Bernie Mac was funny. You say that we're used to Transformers being epic. Yeah, absolutely. We have seen Transformers epic. But we've also seen City of Steel and Child's Play. We have seen
Car Wash of Doom.
Car Wash of... Actually, I kind of like that because Rat Bat's awesome. But...
True.
But
Low Road. I mean, Low Road. I mean, again, go back to something within the same as Beast Wars. So, yeah. Yeah, certainly.
But compared against action movies, my real complaint at a technical level, if two robots are tussling, they kind of bleed together. I mean...
Sure. And I think there were some technical problems with the first film. And one of the things that I've talked about that was a problem on the first film, I think, is I think the robots were bigger in frame than Michael Bay was expecting. So when he's shooting his live panels for the first fight when Bumblebee and Barricade are fighting,
mm-hmm.
The shot is way too tight. So you really, he didn't have enough frame to really see them at the proper angles in order to be able to get a good idea of what's going on. Part of that, yes, is the models, but they were trying to go for real world, and I totally get that and totally understand that. And so I'm forgiving, I guess, as far as the models go, because I understand they're trying to fit it into a real world framework, and I think that that probably is going to be the better approach, other than trying to do the box formers or anything else that people would have wanted.
There were Meta Senior designs. They're kind of hokey, but they're classic.
So as far as the film goes, they don't really care what the robots look like. As long as they look like robots, they transform. Again, so going back to trying to say that they're making an action movie. So here's reasons why I'll say that I think I like the film and I was actually impressed by things in the film. Michael Bay didn't really have to do anything as a reference to the fans. And there were a lot of things that were built into that story that were built into the framework that referenced things that didn't have to be there. And some of that was the writing. Some of that, you know, I don't want to dodge the writers. They did a lot of work to build it in.
Other than the names of the characters, you know, Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, so on and so forth, Bumblebee being yellow, as you know, Sam Witwicky. What are some examples of that?
Well, I think you have the concept of Decepticon partnering. You have Barricade and Blackout having smaller partnering robots, which was something that was established within the fandom. You have the concept of the creation matrix or the matrix, which was more of a comic standpoint. I mean, if you look at the Allspark, essentially that's what it is. It's a creation matrix. It's called differently, but that's what it functions as. You have references to Cybertron. You have references to the joint between the Autobots and Decepticons, you know, them being like one at one point. But you have and just the little things like Frenzy being a cassette player.
True.
You know, so little things that didn't have to happen. And a big thing is Optimus Prime. Bay was under no necessity to have Peter Cullen come in and do Optimus Prime, and there are a lot bigger names that could have done that character, and he chose to go with Peter Cullen.
Kind of wish they'd have went with Welker, even though the for Megatron, even though the Megatron Welker voice wouldn't fit the movie design, but Hugo Weaving, I just doesn't do it for me. I cannot understand a darn word he says in the first movie.
Yeah, they kind of tried to do a Cybertronian language, and I don't know that it carried over very well. You know, and then again, that's where we get disappointed. It's like, well, they didn't get enough airtime. The Decepticons didn't get enough airtime, but there were at least the seeds planted, and that's why I say I think at least for the first movie, you got enough flavors, you got enough taste or enough things. But I think as far as the references go, I think the references really got bumped up in the second film. And they were able to build on things that they had started out in the first and then carried over into the second. Well, okay, so here's an example for you. Just think about something from the first film. How about, you know, it's a little bit of a stretch, but is Bumblebee and Michaela, when Bumblebee loses his legs, is that similar to sort of a Target Master partnership? I mean, you can almost see moving in that direction. That's a little bit of a stretch, but that's what it always made me think of. Like when I saw that, I always thought, wow, that's kind of,
That's the cool thing about being a fan. With the G1 cartoon, you had to read into stuff. I mean, you had to read into stuff that wasn't there because there was no subtext. You really sort of had to expound in your own mind with things like that. And, I mean, like, Dion. What happened to Dion? Well, some people think that Ironhide became Dion. Some people think that Ultra Magnus became Dion. In reality, nothing became of Dion. He never showed up again. But that's the cool thing. You can look back and you can say, oh, well, obviously he's this character because this character is loyal to Optimus. And, you know, so as Dion was loyal to Orion Pax.
Right.
You just sort of, you have to, it's like reading a book. It all takes place in your mind. That's the cool thing about being a fan. And that's one thing that Transformers has always had going for it. Transformers, you know, we can, for all we can joke about the deathies in the fandom and, you know, the Beast Wars sucks kids who used to pop up on Alt-Toys Transformers. Transformers fans are smart fans. I'm not going to say they're smarter than most fans, but they're smart fans. And we've been able to come up with all these fanciful ideas about the origins of the Transformers, where Transformers is going. You know, there's a lot of really good Transformers fan fiction out there. At least there was, and you know, back when I was really keeping track of that sort of thing. And we've been able to fill in the gaps and, you know, fill in the blanks that just because of the lack of quality, lack of, you know, forethought, lack of time, actually executing an episode, because a lot of those writers with the G1 cartoon, they had like 48 hours to write an episode. Mm-hmm. So the fans are great at coming up with ideas to explain why things happen. Like, you know, the pocket universe where the mass of Soundwave goes when he goes from a giant robot to a small cassette deck.
Or Optimus Prime's trailer. Yeah.
Hey, actually, I think you just won me over. The first movie is not that bad. I watched it a couple of weeks ago on HD DVD. I picked the wrong format.
Oh.
But, yeah. But I watched it a couple of weeks ago, and I can enjoy it at the humor level, but the thing that I've always hated about it is because the movie starts, the Transformers are from Cybertron. That's their origin. We're from Cybertron. We have good guys and bad guys. And there's no backstory. I put on Twitter, if I remember correctly, that the Transformers the Transformers movie universe is this sterile, boring universe in which the Transformers simply come from Cybertron and Cybertron's no longer there. That's the basic gist of things. Of course, the Transformers movies, what, 2 hours, 15 minutes, something like that. It didn't have, however, 78, 79 episodes that the G1 cartoon had to build this universe. But the fact that you're able to say, hey, Mikhail is a target master, I think that's actually pretty cool. And, you know, I may be able to go back and watch it and sort of fill in the gaps instead of just sitting there and watching it in this jaded mood that I'm always in. It's like, oh, this sucks. That sucks. Oh, the writing's bad. Seriously, though, that thought that you have really sort of makes me sort of sit back and think that spark of creativity, that spark of imagination that really led me to being a Transformers fan. Maybe if you can find it in the movie, it can't be that bad.
Okay, so let's talk about what went right with Transformers 2 and where I think it went okay. So here's the deal. First of all, again, references out the wazoo to existing Transformers material built into Transformers 2. You've got the concept of Jetfire having a Decepticon background and then converting to Autobots. Yeah, it's a bit contrived, but it's there.
And I agree. I dug that. Jetfire is probably my favorite character in the movie.
You have a reference to the Fallen. You have a reference to there being a series of Primes. So you have a concept of there being a group of leading Transformers, a group of maybe even original Transformers. Yeah, their sacrifice thing kind of bit, but you at least have that seed. You have that seed planted. You have the advent of the Matrix of Leadership, which I would say actually functions more like a key to Vector Sigma,
yeah,
than the Matrix of Leadership. But I mean, again, they don't have the right names, but the reference is there, the essence is there, as far as the function goes. You have the concept of a pretender, even though it's not very well fleshed out or executed. You at least have that process there. But here's the really crazy thing. I don't know if you caught it. My wife didn't catch it. there's a seed planted in the second film for a possibility of going into the real origins of the Transformers, possibly into maybe Primus and Unicron. Did you catch it? I don't know if you did or not.
Not offhand.
Okay. So, Optimus Prime, spoilers, by the way, if you've not seen the film.
Everyone listening to this by this point is saw.
Okay, I hope so. If you haven't, wow.
They're not going to.
Yeah, either not going to or wow. So, in the film, Optimus Prime comes out of the jet, transforms right in front of the military guys or whatever. And the one says to the other, if God created us in his image, whose image were they created in?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I remember that.
Yeah, but I think it's a great seed line. It's just the kind of thing that is that little bit of seed planted for where can the story go from here.
Yeah, in fact, actually, in the movie, it was not asked for, nor was it appreciated, but I turned over to Kim, and I said, there are two gods in the Transformers universe. There's Unicron, the dark god, and there's Primus. He's the good god. And she just sort of looked at me like I was an idiot and sort of just ignored me. But yeah, no, that's true. And things like that, they always get you. They sort of, you know, squeeze things in. You know, they're never going to reference that line again, but it did plant a thought in your head as to who, where did the Transformers come from? All we know is they came from Cybertron.
And the AllSpark was involved, but again, where did the AllSpark come from? And, you know, so there's all of these seeds that are out there, and they went a little bit further, again, to answering those questions. You get a little bit more of the story. So, you know, again, I don't want to compare Transformers to Star Wars, because certainly Star Wars is a bit higher art. But when you come to the first Star Wars film, yeah, you understand there's a force and it's this thing that's out there, but you really don't get the full concept of the light and dark side and everything until the second and third movie, and maybe even until the prequels. So it's a lot to try to, it's a lot of backstory that doesn't matter to try and cram all that stuff in to the first movie. They've expanded on it in the second film. I would expect we'll see more of it in the third film. But there's just, I mean, there's a lot of things. Think about it. There's the concept of Transformers having a soul, the spark. There's, again, the matrix of leadership, the primes, the concept of switching sides, pretenders. I mean, they're the brothers, the Autobot brothers. You have that concept.
I for one, did not hate Mudflap and Skids. I'm probably the only person that I know that didn't, but I didn't.
No, my wife and I both enjoyed them. And I want to say right here, and again, people may have different opinions on this, but I don't think that they were inherently racist. I don't think that Michael Bay was sitting out there thinking, I'm going to make two characters that will offend people, but I mean, I can see where people would construe it that way, but I don't think that they're any more racist than Wheelie was.
Wheelie. I keep forgetting that the little remote controlled truck is Wheelie. Sorry, I was thinking, how is Wheelie? And he's a little fanciful, but I can't really see how you'd say he's racist about him. Okay, I got you. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. But I don't think he's any more racist than Wheelie is. Even Shakespeare used colloquial references. He used different references in order to add comedy. You know, we have certain perceptions about people of certain levels of education, certain dispositions of popular culture. And I don't think that there's anything inherently racial about those. Now, I'm a 30-year-old fat white guy, so what do I know? But I'm
exactly.
Just throwing it out there, you know, that I don't think so. And I certainly don't think that was the intention anyway.
Look at the time. We've been at this for quite a while now. It's actually twice as long as last week's RFC was. Oh, and for all of you faithful listeners out there who I can actually break kayfabe now. That was the first RSC from, I'm going to say, it wasn't last week. It was, what, 2-3 weeks ago? That was the first RSC since 2004. That was the first RFC in 5 years. I do want to bring RFC back. I don't know that I can do a weekly show, but I think that, you know, with help from JD and XV and my buddy Chris, local buddy Chris, he has offered. He's a faithful listener. He's actually listened as long as I've done this. I think we can probably do this on a bi-weekly basis. It's fun doing. RFC has always been, and this is what I said 10 years ago, it's about Transformers fans. It's about being a fan. It's about just enjoying the hobby, and I really want to stick with that. And I always will, as long as there's a Radio Free Cybertron, it'll be about the fans. And speaking of being a fan, I came home this evening, and there was a package laying at my door. I didn't know what it was. I thought it might have been the Man-at-Arms from Masters of the Universe, which I actually bought a couple days. Are you in the Masters of the Universe at all, JD?
Not since I was like 4 years old, and I certainly don't have pictures of me being excited about He-Man. But no, not in a long time.
Yeah, my friend Chris used to be known as Hitman Pez on Alt Toys Transformers many years ago. He was telling me about the outrage in the He-Man fandom about the Hordak figure that didn't have sculpted abs. Apparently his midriff was exposed in the armor, but they didn't bother to sculpt his abs, and it was driving people crazy. The He-Man fandom's, you know, the He-Man fandom is the He-Man fandom, and it's always been interesting. But I thought it was the new Man-at-Arms figure, which is for adult collectors only. Apparently they don't sell them at retail. Mattel apparently doesn't have the rights to make stuff based on the cartoon or some such. So they're creating toys. And if you He-Man fans out there are screaming at me because I don't know what I'm talking about, I really don't. Mattel is making action figures based off of the little comics that were packed with the Masters of the Universe figures. And I really haven't been interested in many of them so far. I would like to have had a Skeletor and a He-Man, but I missed those. But the first one that actually I really did want was a Man-at-Arms. And looking at it, I don't know if it's an accessory or if it's a second head or whatever, but he has a mustache, which I just thought was awesome. So I came home, I saw this package, and I was excited. This is a long story to explain that I didn't get a Man-at-Arms, but I was excited. It's like, oh my God, it's going to be my Man-at-Arms with the mustache. But no, it wasn't. One of the figures that actually I missed, and this is a big problem with me. I'll always sort of skip on picking up toys, and I'll just buy them all toward the end of the line. Luckily, I've dropped $700-800 at once, and finishing up like Armada or Energon. I'm an idiot, but I was actually pretty good about getting all of the toys from Animated, and I saw online where Walmart had Ultra Magnus for $40 with a $10 gift card. And I thought that was a great deal, but I didn't get it. I sort of hesitated, and I'm like, well, I really want Ultra Magnus, but he's not the best toy in the world, but he's one of the coolest looking. Then a couple of days ago, my friend Chris, Hitman Pez, told me that he saw Ultra Magnus on ToysRUs.com for $20. And I ordered that like 3 days ago, and lo and behold, he was here. I didn't expect him, but he's awesome.
Ultra Magnus here.
I don't know if you can hear that, but...
Don't be a hero, Optimus. It's not in your programming.
I love that. He's just such a great-looking toy, and $20. I don't know if it's still $20, but if it is, go to ToysRUs.com and look at it. If you don't already have Ultra Magnus, he's definitely worth picking up for $20. And if I can find the Roadbuster... color or Roadbuster repaint of Ultra Magnus. I'll probably pick that up as well. But I was just really excited to see that. I'm not the hardcore fan that I was, say, 10 years ago. Back then, you know, it's just Transformers. That was my thing. Sort of things ebb and flow with me. The Transformers are sort of on a downhill swing for probably 2 or 3 years, but it's moved back up, and most of that's due to Transformers Animated because I absolutely love it. So, Ultra Magnus, he's a good toy. Here's the cool thing. I am actually talking with JD via Skype. When I was doing RFC originally, I was doing it on a 14.4 modem. So I couldn't check the internet and communicate at the same time. Actually, I couldn't do that because I had one phone line and I did the internet over the same line that I used for voice. But I'm going to quickly check and see if Ultra Magnus is still $20. And if he is, by golly, you should pick him up.
While you're looking at that, just a quick shout out to Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, I just put that on Twitter myself. You know, I don't actually remember seeing Walter Cronkite on TV, but he, of course, had a lot to do with the state of media today. We really wouldn't have television news as it is if it weren't for Walter Cronkite. And, you know, God rest his soul, or Primus rest his soul, or Unicron, or wherever he went.
Or nowhere.
Or no, that's possible.
But
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it's sad because Sunday is, of course, the 40th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing, and no voice of that time is more prolific than Walter Cronkite. So it's really sad that we've lost him 2 days before the 40th anniversary, but yeah, he will certainly be missed.
Yeah, and I just got confirmation. Ultra Magnus, as of Friday, 9:30, still $20 at Toys R Us. So yeah, you should totally pick him up. He is worth every penny of $20. So if you're out there, people, if he's still there, go get him. I guess that'll do it for this week. JD, this has been really fun. It's really different. This is actually the third time ever I've had a co-host. And this is actually probably the most enjoyable.
It's great.
So yeah, so definitely you're going to be back next time.
I'll be here.
So you got any ideas for what we're going to talk about?
I got a few, but it'll be a surprise. But yeah, I think you know we've got 25 years of an awesome series to talk about. So yeah, I'm sure we'll find something.
Cool. So where are you at online?
Where am I at? You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on MySpace. But pretty much anywhere you can find me, Unicron Spawn. If not, I'm under JD Church for just about any places. But yeah, feel free to follow me on Twitter. And feel free to follow me on Facebook as well. I'll take a Facebook friend anytime.
Sweet. Yeah, same here. You can go to facebook.com/BrianKilby, BrianKilby, and I'm there. Or you can actually check out my website at BrianKilby.com. I have, like, RFC stuff up there. I have a blog, which I never update, and I have a fitness blog. You can look at my Flickr pictures and all sorts of crap. I got a blog archive going back to 2003, I think. Five, something like that. But you can also follow me on Twitter, which I still feel like a whore saying that. Twitter.com/BKilby. And of course, if you're listening to this on iTunes, check out our website, tfradio.net. tfradio.net, or you can go to BrianKilby.com, click on podcast, and you will be able to see our entire archive going back to 1999. What other podcast has an archive going back to 1999? None, I say. None. JD, thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir. It's a good time.
I will see you all next time. Have a good one.